Blog Talk Radio.
Many people regard you as a personification of Ubuntu. What do you understand Ubuntu to be?
In the old days when we were young, a traveler through a country would stop at a village. And he didn't have to ask for food or for water. Once he stops, the people give him food, entertain him. That is one aspect of Ubuntu, but it will have various aspects. Ubuntu does not mean that people should not enrich themselves. The question, therefore, is, are you going to do so in order to enable the community around you to be able to improve? These are the important things in life. And if one can do that, you have done something very important which will be appreciated.
The Open Source Report on the 13th of December 2015. We're attempting to get these open source reports out each week. We've fallen a little bit short. We've been traveling, and of course, we've been doing some studies at college. But nonetheless, we are here at Cranston, and our other endeavors on the Boston Red Network, which is WBRN. And this particular event is a part of our ongoing effort to propagandize around Libre software and open source as a generic term. Now, we've talked about the philosophy behind open source as opposed to Libre software, which Libre means free. Open source is open, the code is out there. It is basically, I suppose you'd say, a hedge pin or a starting point for development. The code is given back into the community, and of course many of the projects that are at Apache and other places, and we've rendered our objection to the term Apache project, but now there are many projects there. This is part of the insensitivity to the Aboriginal or Native peoples in the Americas that is in the software regime. It is very unfortunate that we have this type of, as they say, crass behavior there. When it was formed, of course, we've been following the project since its inception. We had the web server there, the Apache web server, and now there's just a number of projects there that are too long to list. But we continue around that type of work, and our work has started to center more and more past kernel development. We'll get to that in just a minute. Well, we'll do it now. We'll get to the present kernel. We usually open a report with this, so we don't want to, as they say, be tardy with it, getting that up there. The Linux kernel, the latest stable kernel is a 4.3.2. Now, we're running the Slackware edition, which means we have, let's see, 4.1.14. So we advise everyone out there to update their kernels, no matter which distribution that you're using, at least to a 4-point kernel. Now, many people have some of the older kernels and not patching it. Back 20 years ago, 20 years ago, we used to update the kernels regularly because we had much smaller kernels. They were fitting on what was called at the time the little 2.5 disks. And then we exploded to a CD, if you can believe that. And now, obviously, the compressed kernel, you will get it on a, 4.5 DVD at best. And it's a mammoth device. where it's went now. Obviously, there are some distributions. This is a Slackware distribution, but there Ubuntu is basically the same. But there are light editions that are stripped down that run. You use, I should say, much less disk space. And of course, we have embedded devices which also run a Linux type kernel. But back to where we what we're covering these days, of course, security is paramount to the Linux kernel and open source library software in general. We use those terms interchangeably, and following the open foundation there with Mr. Dr. Stallman, his definitions, we do in fact concur with him, and the foundation has been there a very, very long time, and we've supported it now over 20 years and its work. And what is happening there is you have an evolution, not a revolution, but an evolution, that you will see more Libre software out there, and also at the same time the evolution of what is now termed a generic term, open source. Many of the generic companies were forced to adopt more open source. It is along a development line. I remember when we used to give talks at User View Blue, we talked about the socialization of knowledge process. A fellow, Dr. Knowles, we used to fall back upon his paper. But it is, in effect, happening now. Microsoft claims that they have 80% of the so-called Fortune 500 on their Microsoft Cloud platform. It's went from Azure to now the Microsoft Cloud platform. But, of course, Amazon is out there. Pure, that is the IBM implementation. There are various other implementations out there. I think HP has sort of got out of the implementation business. But back to what we are actually covering. We, of course, look at Android, and more, we'll be talking about Android and some of the things that happened at the Chrome Developers Conference, and how some of those tools are now in the Firefox Mozilla browser. We'll hit upon that, and as we leave, there'll be an edited version of the keynote at the Chrome Developers Conference out west. But back to security, yes, we'll be talking more about security. We'll be talking about what's called wearables. We have a little piece here on a new wearable that is coming via Google. And, of course, the generic Internet of Things. That is sort of like cloud, an advertisement-type term, but there are many devices that can connect to the Internet and do, and from time to time we cover the security of those particular devices. But nonetheless, let's get on to some of the information we have been hoarding, I guess is the word, around. And nonetheless, Tor has a new release, 0.2.7.6 is the newest release that is out. Is the newest version, I should say, a major bug fix in the entry guard section there, and a few minor things, and we'll just get over to what they term here Rogers preliminary analysis of it, and since I've not looked at it, and we are live here, this is basically a programming outline here, so I won't really go into it because the fixes are there, and what has been fixed there is basically the call choice equal router choice random node excluding option exclude node. Anyway, we won't get into the syntax. We can't show you that, but We will remind you to use also the Tor browser, and because it's very, very important that you use it in your various implementations on the client side. It is, in fact, it's imperative. And many people, it's sort of, I guess, what you call a common error that people make. And let me just check on the Tor browser here. So we can see if they got the browser here. Anyway, the latest version of it. So we can kind of move around a bit there, and fortunately, we'll get back to the Tor browser. Nonetheless, let's move on to Android. Marshmallow, as you know, is Android 6.0. Is according to this is the Inquirer, and this is by Carly Page. Is running on just 0.3% of devices. The adoption is very, very slow. Marshmallow made its first appearance in Google's latest Android distribution figures, but according to this, in comparison, Apple iOS 9 operating system has claimed 66% on the iPhones. Interesting figure here. Google shows that Lollipop isn't increasing its market share much. That would be Android, 5 and 5.1 accounts for 25%. That's up from 23.5% in the previous month. KitKat, that's 4.4, falls from 38.9 to 37.8. Well, Jelly Bean took a line share of a total share of 29%, down from 30.2%. And then we still have 4.0. I don't think Ice Cream Sandwich finished at 3.3%, down from a whole of 0.1% in the previous month. While Gingerbread is out there claiming 3.5%. The newest numbers highlight Android's fragmentation problem with OpenSignal, described earlier this year, is good for software's global reach, but bad for developers working with it. Fragmentation is a strength and is a weakness of the Android ecosystem, according to this article. A headache for developers, no doubt about that. Android devices come in all shapes, sizes, no doubt there. OpenSignal noted that while there are 24,000 different mobile devices in the world, more than double the number in 2013, Android remains extremely fragmented. And we'll talk a little bit about some of the APIs here when the Chrome Developers Conference are there. Just kind of hit on it very, very slightly. And finishing it up, we have, however, seen a slight reduction in fragmentation over the past year with the market share of dominant API version in a KitKat having risen over the past few months. And KitKat is, in fact, the addition that you'll see, I should say the flavor, in this case of Android, that you see in most of the browsers out there. And let's see what else here. Oh, yeah, the Flash Player updated 79 fixes there. We like to use this particular site because it has a lot of things that we don't normally get. The latest, the Adobe release. So you might assume it's something the best of. It's not. It's a packaged band-aids there, judged by the noise coming from the security commentary community. They are not patches that you want to set on to get applying. Wolfgang Krondick, he's a chief technology officer at Quixus. All but three of the vulnerabilities could be used by an attacker to gain code execution running under the user in the browser. Flash-based attacks have been a favorite for attackers, no doubt. The flash situation has also informed a Google Chrome patch release, according to Chris Carty. He's a production manager with Chevlink. That's a number. That's a patch organization. That's spelled S-H-A-V-L-I-K. Anyway, nonetheless, Google has released an update to its Chrome, which includes security fixes aside the support for the Flash plugin and the 78 vulnerability. In other words, this patch is not what we normally call a patch. The security updates for Flash Player, these address critical vulnerabilities that could permanently allow an attacker to take control of an affected system. Adobe recommends the update, so if you're running Flash, we would advise you to update it. And falling back on the Inquirer again here, let's see, a little Raspberry news here. Little article here. Apple CEO Cook labeled out of touch after naming Chromebook's test machines. The Chromebook test machines are only successful because they are cheap. Cook made the announcement on in a BuzzFeed interview. In fact, Glenn Griswold had an article talking about the cutting edge of BuzzFeed. I don't use BuzzFeed very much. But anyway, a small educational technology firm called Neverware has since been so outraged by his remarks, it decided to write to him. "We're struck by how out of touch with reality Mr. Cook's comments are, and we wrote an open letter to him in response." The letter, which can be read here, scorns Cook for caring more about a competitor than for the education of children. "As a CEO of one of the most powerful companies in the world, your words are reprinted around the world." The letter reads, "You have the ability to influence hundreds of millions of people. Knowing that is a pretty swipe at a competitor's product. The best you can do, a petty swipe." I need to have my glasses on here. Cook's remarks were made while he was talking about education, how he believes the curriculum in American schools need to be reinvented. He said that Apple wouldn't be following Google's strategy in the education market when responding to a question about Chromebooks overtaking iPods as the most popular device there. That's what it's really all about. Cook didn't mention any names, but the CEO implied that Chromebooks and other inexpensive PCs are really only successful because they are cheap. Well, they are cheap, and they do what one needs to do in the Internet of Things, and with a mobile being out there, you can access applications, which means you can have a browser or whatever application is there. While Chromebooks have failed to make a dent in the enterprise market, a lot of this is due to something called advertisement. Cook's comments could come across as slightly punitive, considering Google has claimed by the end of There will be more Chromebooks in schools and other devices. This is a very good thing because the Apple devices cost too much, and Apple really does not deliver speed or quality that a Chromebook can also deliver. It's not that. Needless to say, Chromebooks is still a popular device with manufacturers. The firm Asus was the latest brand to unveil a Chromebook device. They make hardboards that's spelled A-S-U-S. So the Chrome devices are all out there. It is running a Linux subsystem in bed, running Chrome, naturally. We'll be talking about Chrome in just a minute here. The Asus Chromebook Flip comes with a 10-inch HD touchscreen, 360 rotation, etc. The all-metal device, and this, you know, remember when Apple started doing this, is a 2-gig quad processor, pretty fast. It's the ROC chipset, 3288, and an ARM-based chip on a 32-bit quad-core Cortex A11 design. This comes with 4 gigs of gigabytes of memory and 16 gigabytes basically on the stick. It's equipped with a hybrid. The budget hybrid is claims 10 hours of battery life. That's quite a bit of battery life before you have to recharge it, so it is a stable device. Whereas Lativo, that used to be the IBM computer line of fake books, etc., has a Windows Power Yuga line up there. So a little different lineup going on there with these competing devices. But for schools, something we've been campaigning for a long time is to get more open source hardware into the schools that is cheap. And of course, that is on the client side, but the next step is obvious to get in on the service side in education and in government. The whole idea of open source of liberate software out there. Let me just get this one very quickly here. This is WordPress, and we have been updated to, I think it's 4.1, the latest WordPress edition here. And let me look at the date. This is the 10th day WordPress the service is up, set up by WordPress to better support WordPress as it uses by suffering a security breach. And I don't get the addition. The engines are well contained by robust support. Well, anyway, we didn't exactly get what they are providing too. And one other item here, very, very quickly, while we're here, Facebook plans to open source its next generation machine learning system here, has unveiled its next GPU-based system for training neural networks, OpenRack compatible hardware, codenamed Big Sur, which plans to open source. And we talk here a lot about open source software, but now open source hardware. Big Sur comprises 8 high performance CPUs up to 300 watts each, with the flexibility to configure between multiple PCIs topology that mix its uses of the NVIDIA accelerated computer platform. This means we can train twice as fast and explore networks twice as large. The firm is on its engineering blog, And Facebook claims that as well as a better performance, Big Sur is also far more versatile and efficient than the off-the-shelf solutions in its previous generations. They used to just literally get stuff off the shelf, put them in their data centers, but we spoke to NVIDIA as a project manager for GPUs. Ahead of the launch, who has been working on the Big Sur project alongside Facebook for some time. The project is the first time that a complete computing system that is designed for machine learning and AI, artificial intelligence, will be released as an open source station. Interesting. We'll have to look into that. But while Big Sur was built with NVIDIA, the new Tesla M40 hyperscale accelerator is in mind. It actually supports a wide range of PCIe cards, and what Facebook believes could make for better efficiencies in production and manufacturing to get more computation power for every penny than it invests. Servers can also require maintenance and hefty operating resources. So like other hardware in our data center, Big Sur was designed around operational efficiency and serverability. Very important there. We've removed the components that don't get very much use and components that fail relatively quickly, such as hard drives and DIMM, can be removed and replaced in a few seconds. Very interesting. Perhaps the most interesting aspect of Big Sur announcement is Facebook plans to open source it. So we'll leave it at that, and we'll skip on here a little bit. Android adware hits thousands of apps and can't be removed. This is something from DZNet. Researchers have found new types of Android malware found in thousands of apps pose a problem with Facebook and Twitter, etc. Lookout Security, a mobile security firm, discovered that so-called Trojanized adware, which puts a new twist on how cyber criminals are generating money by taking legitimate apps from the Google Play Store. Malicious actors will repackage the apps with baked-in adware. We've seen that on the desktops. There exist at least three similar families of Android-based Trojanized adware, which there, and most of them are Ship Debug and several others. Anyway, so much for that. Just wanted to hit on Sense System, the new hacker search engine similar to Shadan, Census. At the end of last month, for security researchers for SEC consultants found that the lazy manufacturer of home routers and Internet of Things, now this is what we were talking about early, have been reusing the same set of hardcore encryption keys, leaving around 3 million Internet of Things devices open to mass hacking. How did researchers get this? These they use Census, CENSYS, a new search engine that daily scans the whole internet for all vulnerable devices. Census maintains complete database of everything on the net, and is similar to the hacker search engine Shodan. Census employs a more advanced method to find vulnerabilities in devices, and we'll put a link up there, and make the internet. How does it work? Census collects information on host websites via daily scans of IPv4 address space and the internet protocol version 4 that routers the majority of internet traffic today. In so doing, the new search engine uses two companion tools, ZMAP and ZGrab. It's an open source network scanner, and ZGrab is an application layer scanner ZMAP scans 4 billion IP addresses on the internet and collects new data every day. So we'll put a link up here to this particular one, and let's move on here. And we won't get to Marshmallow. Here we were planning on doing it, but sometimes time does not permit you to do the many things that you would wish to do in the broadcast. Hacking your help, we want to talk a little about remembering that it seems like the most that can happen if your personal information was compromised, the internet of medical things. Imagine the case of a cardiac patient with an important an implanted pacemaker defibrillator. Such a device can literally be a lifesaver. The medical equipment of this sort is not of the set it and forget it type. It needs regular monitoring. It happens if a patient lives 200 miles from the nearest clinic. A solution that the device manufacturer can cook up involves adding a wireless control capability so that adjustments can be made without having to open the patient's chest. The downside, if the good guys can do this, so can quote-unquote the bad guys. If the wrong person at the controls, a life-saving device becomes a killer device. And we'll put the link up to this, a particular article we thought it was worth talking about. How best to manage encrypted keys on Linux? We'll just a strong SHH, and we advise people to update that. We did it on Slackware, the difference between a public key and a private key. Clearing up here, the way you can generate a private key from a public key, but you could do the reverse. The purpose of the authorized key and what goes on it, how you can use private keys. We'll just put this up as a, you can read it yourself. How to verify a denial of service attack, DDoS attack, with a netstart command on a Linux terminal. Let me just very, very quickly get this. We don't have it. Small audio, you can see to check if your server is under attack. We used to do this in the old days. The command is useful to find out how many let's see what the command is here. Display all active internet connections, etc. And The Tor project is appealing for funds. We remind you of that. Is a nonprofit which runs Tor, better known as the Onion Router. That you can download the Onion Router itself, and we advise you to do that. Called Amenity. Now the Tor browser, we were looking for it before, and just make sure that. We get it up here, and there are different, the stable ones. You can go to the Tor organization, and you'll find a 32-bit and a 64, wait a minute, a 32-bit 64 for Windows, and the same for Linux, and OS is a 64-bit. Very wise they did that, and of course there's some beta versions down there also. So you are looking at various things on Tor. So if you go there, you'll get the latest implementation, which we advise you to do, and you actually want to run the browser to keep things going, as one would say. Now, lastly here, I believe Linux users will soon be able to update Dell firmware from inside the OS. That is coming. Dell will be the first big company out there that are finally taking into consideration allowing Linux users to upgrade the firmware on their devices. And IBM and Cooling present a global virtual hackathon in 2016. That will occur on February the 20th and 21st. You can enter it. There are a lot of prizes. The first prize is $100,000. The second prize is $30,000, and $10,000 is the prize. The three top individuals will win cash prizes, one-year subscriptions there, and various other things will be happening here. So we'll try to put a link for it also. And Google, this is being our last one. Google is working on a wearable that can test diabetic blood sugar levels. Being a diabetic, device could use a pressure gas to pierce the skin and capture a tiny amount of blood, basically like the meter that diabetics use. Google has filed a patent application for a wearable device that can test diabetes sugar levels without using a needle. The application filed with the Patent and Trademark Office on the 3rd of December. Device might not be used for diabetes alone. The patent note that blood pressure could be tested for various quantities, including hormone levels, protein levels, enzyme levels, which could factor into medical conditions. As lancets have become thinner, however, there are more apt to bend or break the skin. Some diabetics generally test their glucose levels at least once a day. I do that. And if not, 2 to 3 times a week. We did that, but we switched to another medication, so it's a little different there. But anyway, this is not the first foray of Google into testing devices. They had a corneal lens that uses sensors and et cetera, antennas to test. Oh, well, wait a minute here. Nearly a year ago, reports that it was tinkering there. Anyway, the lens was designed to test blood sugar levels in users' tears. Was at a prototype stage last year. The company said that its scientists were looking into the lens. That also offered a warning to users when blood sugar levels were too high. So this is part of, quote-unquote, the great advertisement, and we'll put a link to this, advertisement term called the Internet of Things, which can be a very good thing. Nonetheless, we'll go now to the Chrome Developers Conference, which is held in December out west. We'll talk to you soon. This is M.A. at Cranston. Have a good week and a happy holiday season. Good day.
And reflect on where we've come with Chrome. So Chrome's been a product. We've had Chrome out for a long time on desktop, but on Android, actually, it's only 3 years old. It was in 2012 when we first brought Chrome to Android. And we've been working very hard to make it a much better product on mobile, to make sure that we are building the best web platform we can to help developers reach users on mobile through the web. So a lot of work's gone into Chrome. A lot of work's gone into making the web better. We're going to be spending time today, tomorrow, talking about that. Chrome team's also put a lot of work into the WebView. And for users on Lollipop and later, it's the WebView and Chrome. You know, I'm very pleased to say that WebView and Chrome both auto-update together, and that's a fabulous accomplishment. So we're very excited about the things we can do to make the web ecosystem stronger, as well as to make the web work better in the context of native apps. So I put this slide up last year. Last year, we had 400 million users on Chrome on mobile. We were very proud to share this. And this year, I'm pleased to announce that actually the number is doubled. We're up to over 800 million users on Chrome on mobile. So we're excited about this. Obviously, we put a lot of work into Chrome. It's great to see users liking the product. But I think it's really exciting even more so because it means web developers get access to this set of users with a modern, up-to-date web browser that implements modern features on the platform, and it makes for a very large addressable population of users for web developers trying to reach users on mobile. So we're going to get into some of that. But first, I want to spend some time talking about the web. And we talked about this last year, but I think it's worth highlighting. So the web has many virtues, things that are great about the platform. But one that really stands out is that it's low friction. And so really stands out that it's low friction. And what I mean by low friction is that to a user trying to engage with developers, when it comes to the web platform, interactions are just a tap away. A user taps on an ad. A user taps on a search result. A user taps on a URL in a tweet. And they end up taken to a website. What does that mean? They're landing on the front door of the web developer. The web developer now has a chance to interact with that user, present some experience, allow the user to interact with their service, develop a relationship. There's no install friction. This is really powerful. It means that the experiences you can build can be presented to the user right away. There's no need to get them over some install hump. And so we're all about trying to make this work better. And I want to just spend a little more time digging into numbers. So earlier this year, in June, there was a ComScore report that was announced. And it had this sort of numbers that, on average, users have around 25 apps installed and that they interact with every month on their devices. When we look at Chrome browsing data, we see that on Android, users are opening over 100 sites every month. And what does that mean? That means that, well, it's not only four times larger, but it means that the users are interacting with four times as many developers, if you think about it. And this reach is really interesting. Really interesting if you're a developer. And to put this into more perspective, of those apps that users are interacting with each month, 80% of that time is dominated by just the top three apps. This is also really interesting. And in that report, they looked at monthly unique users. They looked at the amount of traffic that these top sites and top apps are seeing. And so comparing the top 1,000 apps to the top 1,000 sites, they actually see this kind of disparity, that there's actually a lot more unique users reaching those top 1,000 sites than the corresponding top 1,000 apps. And this reach is really powerful, again. And it makes sense, given the low-friction nature of the web, just a tap away to a whole new experience, just a tap away to the user being able to engage with a developer they'd never interacted with before. And the other fascinating thing that they reported on is that this disparity is growing. In fact, the mobile web traffic is growing at a much faster pace than app traffic by a factor of 2x. Again, looking at the top 1,000 sites compared to the top 1,000 apps. And then when you zero in on just the top 50 apps, you see that it's only the top 12 of those apps that have a corresponding site that actually enjoy more traffic on their native app than on their website. And these are the YouTubes, the Instagrams, the Pinterests of the world. Makes sense. But it's not very many apps that enjoy that sort of benefit. And so earlier this year, Flipboard put together and launched a whole new responsive design mobile and desktop web experience. And they reported an astonishing number that they saw a 75% increase in their active user base on mobile thanks to targeting the mobile web. I think this is really impressive. It makes a lot of sense, though, again, given the reach, given the low-friction nature of the web. And this is a great quote. All great apps need to be on the web, especially the mobile web. We totally agree. Chrome's focus is helping you all be successful at doing this. And so I think it goes without saying at this point, and it's obvious, that the web is critical, should be critical to your mobile strategy. Some of the strongest, smartest businesses today are targeting the mobile web, and you can see how that plays out. And so from Chrome's team's perspective, we're trying to make the web work better. This means figuring out how to make the web really work well on mobile. But I want to call attention to the fact that the web is not just Chrome. So although we have 800 million users on Chrome on mobile, and that's a very large user base, there's a lot more users on mobile. And we really care about the web being great. And that means that everyone should enjoy a modern web browser, a modern web platform on mobile. And so we're very committed to working with standards bodies, working with other browser vendors, working with web developers, working with others in the community to build new web standards, features for the web platform that are built to last, that other browsers are going to adopt, so that we can move the web forward in a very positive way. We've been having a lot of success here, and we're getting only better at working on building standards. I'm very excited about that. And so I want to take a moment to take a drink of water, but just a second. I want to talk about the things we've done to make Chrome better, make the web platform better. And it's really along these axes, the axes of reliability, performance, and engagement.